folks, welcome back to Home and Away on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed. It is my turn. I am Maxwell Baumbach, and I am joined at this time by Trice. You may be familiar with his work from YouTube. He is one of the best basketball YouTubers out there, in my opinion. Puts together some really cool, really interesting, and really exciting stuff over there. So Trice, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So just to start off, I always like to, a lot of times you listen to a podcast and they'll do plugs at the very end. I like to do the plugs up front. So where can people find you on social media and on YouTube?
Yeah. So on YouTube, it's very simple. Just type in Trice, T-R-I-C-E. And sometimes you have to type in basketball or something like that because there is a couple other channels. But my channel is just Trice by itself. Got all kinds of original basketball documentaries and short films, as well as some other cool little stuff that we have going on over there. We've been at it for a couple of years now with the heavily going into the documentary film side of things. And it's been a blast, man. It's been so much fun to just create and tell some amazing stories. But on other socials, you can find me at Trice High. It's T-R-I-C-E and then High, H-I-G-H. Government name, really easy to remember. You can look it up on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. Got all kinds of content we're starting to pump out in those spaces as well. But it's a good place to get to know me, and I love to always chat, talk some hoops with other basketball heads and fans and whoever else wants to listen.
For sure, man. So just to kind of start off, I was thinking it's interesting just to find out where everyone else in this space like got into basketball. So what was like your first memory of basketball, and what kind of hooked you and kept you like sticking around as far as watching basketball, becoming a fan and all that?
For sure. For sure. So I mean, basketball, man, that's something that's been in my life for a long time. I will say, you know, my earliest memory of basketball is probably like, you know, as a kid playing NBA Street Volume 2 on the PlayStation 2 back in the day. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's like my earliest memories of basketball, like just falling in love with just the creativity and fun of the game. But I didn't really get into as far as it becoming a big part of my life until probably seventh grade, 12, 13 years old. I started playing for the first time. And kind of anybody who knows me knows when I kind of get into something, I go all in. I kind of dive head first when I find something I love. So I fell in love with the game, fell in love with the process and the grind of, you know, working on basketball and working out and things like that. So I ended up playing from seventh grade to like my senior year of high school. I was fortunate enough to be able to play at the NCAA level out of high school. Nice. So I went and played for a school in Pennsylvania for 4 years. So that just kind of deepened my love for the game in a new way. You know, you got to be dedicated at that level. And, you know, it's something where the game took me to places and allowed me to meet people that I never thought I would. And that was just strictly from a playing standpoint. But, you know, in the same realm of things, fell in love with the game as a fan. And it's never stopped. You know, even once I graduated in 2020, still play to this day. And I still, you know, obviously what I do for a living is totally engulfed in basketball and the culture and the stories that it has to offer. So yeah, I owe this game everything, man. I mean, it really changed my life, and you know, I love it.
So when you were playing, you know, growing up in high school and even into college, what was your game like as a player? And like, were there guys that inspired you or like, I want to take from this guy or that guy?
For sure. So I would say in high school, I was more of a traditional point guard, kind of pass first, set the offense up type player. I watched a lot of Chris Paul. I watched a lot of – I really enjoyed Stephen Curry, but I didn't really have the shooting at that point. But once I got to college, kind of one of the things they told me coming in, I'm only like 6 foot. And so, you know, coming into college, they kind of told me straight up when I first got there, they were like, look, if you want to carve out a role on the floor at this level, you're going to have to be able to really spread the floor. You're going to have to really be able to shoot the ball. It's kind of the main way you're going to get on the floor over your career. So I kind of took that to heart. I redshirted the first semester of my freshman year. So we would get back from games away games, and we would travel with the team even if we weren't playing, and we'd get back and I'd immediately go to the gym. I made good friends with the security guard, so he would let me in late at night, and I would just get on the shooting machine and I would shoot till like 1, 2 a.m. every night. And so it got to the point where I really fell in love with the grind and trying to become the best shooter I could be. I started studying guys like Buddy Hield, J.J. Redick, really Steph Curry a little bit, but more so guys who are really good at moving off the ball. And as I became a better shooter, that's kind of the role I started to fill, was a guy who could space the floor, move off ball, move more to a shooting guard type position. And I loved it. I mean, it's a whole lot more fun. The game's a whole lot more fun when your main responsibility is just to put the ball in the basket, man. Just to shoot. And that's kind of your main responsibility. It takes a lot off your shoulder versus being a point guard and having to read know what the defense is running and make sure everybody's set up and make sure everything's good. So, that I would say those are a few guys who I really love to watch. I'll think of someone else later, but people who really embodied that aspect of the game as far as shooting the ball. And to this day, I think now, once I got out of school, I still play in a couple semi-professional pro-am type leagues in the summer. Mm-hmm. And I try to embody more of like the off the dribble point guard shooter type role now. But I love the game. I love playing it. It's something that it never gets old, going up and down the floor, man. It never gets old. Mm-hmm.
For sure, man. Yeah, that's really cool. And I think people always love to know when somebody has that kind of background too, and that you're not just some guy who's like spouting off takes, and that you've kind of been there and done that and been through it at the college level and things like that. So one of the things I'm always curious about is you end up, really putting together this successful YouTube channel, doing sort of documentaries, like you said, like stories, just like covering the history of the game, players that have been through the game, really of like all sorts of varieties, like guys who were, cult following role players to big name superstars to prospects. You really kind of cover the whole gamut over there. What inspired you to get into the YouTube and like video editing and all that sort of things? Like, was that something you started while you were in college? Was it something that you just always wanted to get into? How did that come about?
Cool. So like when I first got into YouTube, I actually made my YouTube channel back in like 2013. So it's almost over 10 years old now. But I didn't start taking it seriously until probably my senior year of high school is when I started doing, and by seriously, it was nothing like what I do now. I made a lot of like highlight mixes and, just take different players and put music in behind some highlights, and it would just create things like that. Nothing really too in depth. Once I got to school, I was able to kind of, obviously with less time, because your schedule is just ridiculous, between class and practice and everything. So when I was able to, I would try to, still put out videos. I then transitioned into the stage of kind of voiceover type videos where I would break down players. I was actually, I was doing a lot of the kind of the stuff that you guys are doing now as far as like draft breakdowns. Like that's kind of what really kind of took my channel off initially, is especially the year Ja Morant and Zion came out. I did a few videos on some guys from that class, Darius Garland, Cam Reddish. Like I did a few videos on different prospects, kind of breaking their games down and doing voiceovers, which kind of came naturally to me because I've always loved the sports media space as far as sports talk radio, sports talk TV. Like that's kind of always been something I've enjoyed. So it was seamless for me to just talk hoops, and it kind of took the channel to another level. And then in 2020, after COVID hit, my senior year of college got cut short. So I got sent home for the rest of the semester, had to finish my degree online. And kind of as I was home, I kind of was left sitting here kind of like, okay, so what am I going to do with YouTube? Like I've always said I'd like to go all in with it, but like what does that look like? Like exactly how do I want to do this? And about that time is when The Last Dance came out on Netflix as The Last Dance was, it hadn't come out yet, but as they were doing promo for it, I had always wanted to get into the more documentary headspace. Like I've always been a fan of sports documentaries, back to like the 30 for 30, like Fab Five, The Bad Boys, like like I've always loved sports documentaries because of the way that they tell stories of something that all us basketball fans are passionate about, which is, you know, the game and the things that come into that off on and off the court. So as The Last Dance was coming out, I was really intrigued by the idea of, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, I have all the time in the world now, literally, we're all at home. Why don't I put together like an extension of The Last Dance? Because I knew they weren't going to go into like Michael Jordan's time with the Wizards and all that. So I was like, you know what, let me do a quote unquote, the real Last Dance. So my idea was, let me do a documentary on Michael Jordan's time with the Wizards and call it The Real Last Dance and release it the night of the final episode of The Last Dance. So when people are, you know, looking up stuff about Michael Jordan online, they find something else to watch. Cause I know I do that when I watch a movie, I'm always looking up different breakdowns and things of movies and stuff. So I thought, why not? You know, it'd be the timing worked out. So I, in the month that The Last Dance was kind of dropping part by part, I was working on my own little like extension of the documentary series. And that was kind of my first experience in the documentary filmmaking space. And it did really well right out of the gate. I think it had 1 million views within a week. And I was kind of like, you know what? I think this is like a really fun space. Like there's literally endless stories to tell. So about a month later, I did one on Jason Williams, White Chocolate. And after that, I immediately knew like this is what I want to do. I want to tell these stories. I want to create these short films and documentary style projects that really dive into some of the backgrounds and things, circumstances, whatever it may be, that make these players who they are and make them so great. So ever since then, you know, it's kind of been a slow and steady process of putting things out. I've got to work with some awesome people and create some really cool things. And, you know, it just keeps progressing over time. The thing that I love the most about it is I really feel like everything I put out each time is a little bit better than the last. And that's my only goal. I just want to keep getting better, kind of tie it back to how I was with basketball. Just kind of try to keep getting a little bit better each time and we'll see where we end up. So I love it. I love to do it though. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. So we're going to continue this conversation, especially on this Michael Jordan, the Real Last Dance topic. In just a moment, we're going to take a quick break. All right. And we are back. This is Maxwell Baumbach joined with Trice. And Trice, I was so glad that you brought that Michael Jordan one up because that was the first Trice thing that I ever saw. Because I was actually in kind of a similar headspace to you during COVID. There was no basketball and I was losing my mind. That's like when I got into the scouting process personally. So it's funny that like both of our journeys into the space of basketball that we're in now both kind of happened for the same reason. But I came across your Michael Jordan video. And it was one I was going to bring up, whether or not you touched on it at all, because I read the book When Nothing Else Matters, the book that goes into Michael Jordan's time with the Wizards. And it's just such like a fascinating, under-discussed part of his journey. So when you were putting that together, were there any like surprises or things that you had like learned or had forgotten about like from that time that like really stuck out to you? Because that was like one of my favorite videos of yours and like my introduction to your channel.
Yeah, I think the biggest, most interesting thing that I took away from it is one, like you said, it is a chapter of his career that is like very much so swept under the rug. No one talks about it. I've seen many people online say like, we just pretend like those times didn't happen. And the thing that I took away from it, because I was only like 5-6 years old during that time. Mm-hmm. The only recollection I have of Michael Jordan with the Wizards is, to reference again, NBA Street Volume 2, because he's on the Wizards on that game. So that was kind of like, as a kid, kind of how I thought of Jordan was the Wizards, just mainly for that reason, like because that was kind of the main like introduction I had to him at first as a kid growing up. But there was so many interesting little things that happened in that season. We'll never really know the motivation he had for coming back until he himself does an interview or something and talks about it, which he hasn't really done since that time. Like keeps it very close to the chest. Doesn't really talk about that time, but from my observation, I think he was just trying to prove to the world that he still had it. He was like, you know, I took this time off, but like I can still hang with the best. And the coolest thing I could take away with from it, and that kind of how I wrapped up that documentary in retrospect, is, you know, the fact that he was able to play at that level, literally was in the running for MVP before a unfortunate Ethan Thomas knee-induced knee injury. he was literally in the running for MVP and playing at an elite level. And I just think it's cool that for over three different generations, basically, you think of like the Magic and Bird, Isaiah Thomas days, then you got like the Patrick Ewing, John Stockton, Karl Malone days, and then for him to still be playing at that level against guys like Kobe, AI, Vince Carter, is just really crazy for me to think about. Like, that's literally three different, completely different eras of basketball that he was dominating. So I think it's pretty cool to see. And I think that it's a very important part of his career that doesn't deserve to be forgotten, because it proves just how good of a player he was in hindsight, that he was able to play at that level for that long.
Absolutely. And I want to get into some of the other pieces that you've done as well. Obviously, you did a Kobe Bryant video that was very successful. Recently put out one on Allen Iverson, and like, I was huge Allen Iverson fan, like big part of me. So I grew up in the Chicagoland area. So like, for me, it was like Jordan was like the guy, because I'm older than you. I'm washed. I'm 32 years old. So I'm about ready to be in the retirement home. But yeah, so for me, it was Jordan, and then like Jordan retired. And then after that, it was like, I got really into the 76ers, because it was like, oh, Allen Iverson is just like the coolest player in the world. Like, it was right. Him. And it was this, like, I was a big Steve Kerr guy. So I liked the Spurs, because that was where Kerr went. But yeah, like so Iverson was like a huge deal for me too. And that was like a recent piece that you put out. Thoughts on like on Allen Iverson, because that was another guy who like for you would have been like a little bit before your time as far as like when he was peaking. So how did you kind of enjoy kind of going through the process on a player that like you probably saw a bit of, you know, but not a ton?
Yeah, I probably have the most fun with those documentaries, where they're players that obviously I know and have seen play and, you know, all these things, but I didn't get to experience. So between him and I did another one on Vince Carter, it's actually probably one of my favorite things that I've ever made. And it's just like, it's so cool to be able to dive into a time period. Literally, like, when I'm working on these things, sometimes I basically immerse myself in like that era, because you're watching countless hours of interviews, reading articles, watching. For the Iverson one, I was watching like hours of like old Reebok commercials. Like, I'm talking about like completely immerse yourself in like late 90s, early 2000s basketball. And I think it's very cool to see the magnitude that AI specifically was able to reach, like the level he was able to reach at his size. That's kind of what stood out to me the most there. I've always heard like Iverson's the pound for pound GOAT. People always say that, but like, I had never really thought much about it till I really dove into the project and watched the way that he carried himself in that season, the MVP season he had, and then the run to the finals with the Sixers. It was really cool to see how a guy that size just had that much dog in him, that he was able to like literally put the city on his back and carry them to a finals. And then not only that, but then win that game one against the Lakers. It was really cool to see. I love diving into that one. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And that was like a game that I remember like being at my friend Jeff's house watching that game and being like, so just like, oh man, like the Lakers are just going to rinse the Sixers. Like, this isn't going to be fun. And they won that first game, and I was so amped up. Like, I was like, all right. They got it. We're going to win the finals. It didn't work out that way, but it was still just like, he really put that team on his back. Like, the degree to which he did, like, cannot be overstated. Are there any pieces that you've done that you are like incredibly proud of, or that like hold a special place in your heart, as far as like, man, I'm really proud of the work I did on this one, whether they did, you know, crazy views or not, but just ones where, right, you know what, I'm really proud of that one, or I had a lot of fun putting it together.
Yeah, I think right off the bat, as far as one that I'm really proud of, but hasn't necessarily done the numbers that I think it will eventually. It's still relatively young, but like I said, the Vince Carter one it was really cool to dive, because that was more so than just Vince Carter, diving into the early years of the Toronto Raptors and kind of how they got to Toronto, different things like that. So it was a really cool story. And I just, something about that just kind of holds a special place for me. And it's funny because I work on these projects and some of them take a couple months to work on, and you get kind of attached to different aspects of them. So like, it's almost like little, like I could look through and think of things that I love about each of them. So that one would be one for sure. The other one would probably be the Steph Curry video I did after the finals last year. Probably it was the most popular one I had done until, just here recently. And that one holds a special place to me because Steph Curry has always been my favorite player. He'll probably be my favorite player of all time for the rest of my life. I mean, I love the way he carries himself, the way he plays the game. He's always been, from as early as I can remember, as far as when I started really getting into basketball, he's always been my favorite. So that was a special one because last season in general, seeing him win that fourth ring, probably one of my favorite moments as a fan of the game of basketball, just because like I obviously had been pulling for him all through the years, and then winning those first three rings, and then seeing them kind of go to the bottom again, and seeing them be at the you know, one of the worst teams in the NBA, and all these injuries and uncertainty, and then to see them somehow get back to the finals, and not only get back to the finals, but for Curry to put on the performance he did in the finals, it was just so special for me to be able to capture that in a documentary. And I loved doing it, and it didn't even feel like work making.
Yeah, that's always the best one. It's like when you turn something out. Literally, it just was a blast.
Exactly. Like in the process of it, I was like, I could work on this forever and never get tired of it. It was such an enjoyment, and I love how it turned out. There's been others. I mean, there's so many that I've enjoyed. I've got a couple projects on Derrick Rose that I've done, and Derrick Rose always holds a special place to me. Like that was my boy from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I grew up a Chicago Bulls fan.
Okay.
Because my uncle was a Chicago Bulls fan, and because of Michael Jordan, and then he kind of like raised me up to be a Bulls fan in a way. So, you know, when Derrick Rose was drafted and when he kind of went on his run with the Bulls, I was watching every Bulls game, because that's back when we were actually on national TV more often. So I was watching every game. And so to kind of be able to recap his career, both with the Bulls, and I've also done some stuff about him with the Timberwolves and the Knicks, kind of going through his complete career arc. Then that's kind of, to put a little like prelude on things, that's actually something I'm in the process of working on now, is basically an all-encompassing documentary of Derrick Rose's entire career, and kind of from the moment he was drafted, or even before that, when he was raised in Chicago, to kind of where he is now, where, you know, his career's kind of hit a stalemate for whatever reason with the Knicks, and he's kind of now he's getting standing ovations for playing like 2 minutes at the end of a game, and you know, so his career's kind of come to a complete arc, I feel like. So it's an appropriate time to cover everything. But it's kind of a combination of a couple things I've already put out, and I'm kind of combining them and adding some things and just making it one complete documentary that kind of goes over his career. So I'm excited about that. It's going to be coming out really soon.
Awesome. We're looking forward to that one. Yes, I was going to ask what you got in the pipeline. That's like, I'm fired up now. I'm excited to see that one.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I was in the Chicagoland area for college, like during the big Derrick Rose peak in Chicago. So, yeah, just always been somebody that's kind of the top of my mind with basketball. So really excited for that. You did mention earlier that you had kind of started off by getting into like draft video breakdowns and things like that. And with us being No Ceilings, that's kind of that's what we're known for here. That's our thing. Who were some guys over the years that you really enjoyed as prospects, like whether or not they panned out or became who you thought they were going to be? Who were some guys that you watched kind of coming up and you're like, oh man, I can't wait to see what this guy's going to do at the next level?
Oh man, let me think. So, one that immediately comes to mind, like I was really high on Colin Sexton
Okay, yeah.
coming
A
out of
lot of people
Alabama.
were.
I was really big on just like 'cause he really reminded me of the way he was playing, really reminded me of like the mentality of Russell Westbrook. Like just like that just like he was going by the young bull, like he was just in your face defense, and I just thought that if he could develop more of that scoring touch, he would. And this was him coming out of right out of Alabama. I really thought that he could, and he in hindsight
He's
has
had a good career, yeah.
carved out a decent career. Nothing wrong with that at all. So that was one guy. Another guy, let's see who's I kind of want to find somebody that I like. I'm looking back here. I want to find somebody. So I remember this is funny. So there was do you remember Malik Newman out of Kansas?
Yes.
So I remember Malik Newman had a crazy March Madness run. I'm talking about like he like literally carried them to a couple wins in whatever year he came out. And I was convinced he was going to be the next Ray Allen. I was
Oh,
convinced.
man.
I thought for sure. I was like, man, this dude. Like he's like young Ray Allen. Like he's got the jumper. He's kind of athletic. I even made a video on YouTube and I had like a picture of him next to Ray Allen. And the question mark was like, he got game question mark. Like I was convinced. So that's one that was like kind of a not kind of,
Everyone has their misses.
it was a severe miss.
Malachi Flynn was like, now, and like he's like been fine, but like he was the guy, like when he came out, I'm like, oh, he's gonna be awesome. Like he is gonna be in that, like I just thought he was like so cut out to be a Toronto Raptors guard. Like when Malachi Flynn came out, where I'm like, he's got the shooting, he's got the toughness, he's a little undersized, but he gets so many steals that it's not gonna matter, and he takes good care of the ball and he can shoot. And like, yeah, everybody's got one. And if you're somebody who's like, oh no, I've never missed, no, you've missed on somebody at some point. And
It might not be on the internet for thousands or however many people to see, but
yeah.
you missed on something talking with your friends for sure.
Exactly. Malik Newman, that's a good one. Yeah, because I feel like I don't remember having like a very strong opinion one way or another about him coming out. But it just goes to show, like, we talk about this all the time. Like, it's really hard to make it at the NBA level. And like, it's
Oh
really hard to
yeah.
shoot at the NBA level. Cause you look at a guy like
Right.
Malik Newman taking five threes a game and hitting 41% of them. And the season
Right.
before that at Mississippi State, 38% on 5.6 per game. Like, it's really hard to know who is and isn't going to stick, especially like
Right.
when guys are really good shooters. And it's like, well, you don't really have a reason to doubt the shot, but
Right.
sometimes it just doesn't come.
Basketball is also such a mental game, and I've seen people literally like as far as at all different levels, like it's amazing how much you can psych yourself out at another level, and like your skill might be there, but it's kind of a mental thing. Like if your head's not in it, and for whatever reason, sometimes guys just can't translate that to another level. I don't know. He might have went and had a great career overseas. I honestly didn't keep up with him much, but I think he'll be all right. I think he'll never have to buy a drink in Kansas ever again.
For
So
sure, yeah.
I think he's got that. But I'm trying to look here. Oh, another player that I was high on was Bol Bol. And
Okay, hey,
I'm still a
vindication.
big Bol. Hey,
That's how
I'm
you play
still a
the
Bol
long
Bol
game.
fan. I'm still a Bol Bol fan now. So like I was big on him right out of the draft, and then he kind of went quiet for a while. And then this year I was kind of like, look. I wasn't completely wrong. Like he shows some flashes. So I've always been a sucker for his game. He's just incredible. He's incredible to watch.
Well, and I think I think we're gonna see more of that, where guys like take 3 4 years, because we did a podcast yesterday about it, and Nathan wrote an article today that was fantastic about how high the bar is offensively now. And I think for so many guys, they're just gonna come to the league, and like the average age of a guy who plays over 20 minutes a game in the NBA is 26. So like with so many guys that come in at 19 and 20, like it's gonna take some time. And like with Bol Bol too, I mean, he had injuries. He was in a loaded depth situation initially in Denver, and then he bounces around a little bit. Like, these things are gonna happen. Like, we're gonna see situations where guys, end up on a team where they don't get a ton of run, and then all of a sudden the years of work come together and it clicks, and it feels like it's an overnight thing, but it's kind of not. And yeah, Bol Bol. So Bol, didn't he only play like 9 games at Oregon? Like, wasn't it a pretty limited
Yeah, and that was the interesting thing about that about like breaking him down. I remember, and I did a short film on him in the fall, kind of when he started playing really well with the Magic this year, and I was able to kind of revisit that video. So I went back and watched the breakdown I had done. Obviously, it's completely different, like covering their career versus like breaking it down and speculating how they're going to play in the NBA. So totally different topic, but it was fun to go back and watch and like see how he had played at Oregon. And like, I don't know, just like he was putting up crazy numbers. Like he was shooting a ridiculous percentage from three, like on like a lower volume, but like for his size, like he was shooting ridiculous, just shooting ridiculous shots off the dribble at his size. Like it was, you know, kind of how we talk about Victor Wembanyama now. That's kind of how I felt about him, you know, at that time, you know, just that he could literally do no wrong at his size. So I still a sucker to watch him play.
Yeah. Well, I think even back then too, like you have to remember the context of like the time it was too, where it's like, it was 2019 and like, we weren't that far removed from like the entire city of New York going bananas over Kristaps Porzingis. Like we weren't that far from like, oh man, like look how good a player can be when they block shots and shoot threes and have some athleticism to them. And like in Porzingis's case, there were injuries, and in Bol Bol's case, there were injury concerns. But yeah, now it's like kind of starting to finally actualize. And I think because he fell so far in the draft, I feel like younger fans or people that are newer to like the scouting process and stuff don't remember that there was like a lot of hype around him. Like when he fell in the draft, it was a stunner. Like this is not a guy who at the time everyone's like, oh yeah, he's going to go like mid to late second round. Like
no, you would have thought he was supposed to be a lottery pick.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be a lottery pick.
Mm-hmm. I think I've always just assumed it was like a medical thing, but yeah, him going mid second round was 100% like not anything that I saw anywhere before draft night. I think that's important to remember. Have you gotten to take a look at much of this year's draft class?
I have a little bit. I have got to keep up with it. I think that it's like extremely loaded, like as far as at the very top. To me, I feel like the top, even maybe the whole lottery, like there's so many gems that could be in there, but specifically the top 10 is just like so many like franchise changing players. It's ridiculous.
So obviously like Victor is somebody who you did a lot of work on. Victor's like obviously like the big name in this class. Where do you kind of stand on Victor? Like what do you think the floor and ceiling are for Victor Wembanyama?
Yeah, so Victor Wembanyama, to me, I think his floor as a player, after, you know, watching so much on him and, you know, doing so much research on his game and his background, I really feel like his floor is probably at the bare minimum, a starter in the league for like several years. I can't see, after, you know, watching his game and just trying to imagine like what it looks like at the NBA level, I can't see him being any less. If he came in with just what he has now and not doesn't develop anything else, I can't see him being less than a solid starter. I mean, just if nothing else, it's just like a rim protecting big that can stretch the floor, and that's like bare minimum. So it's exciting. Like he's such an exciting player to think about. Like I really can't wait to see him at that next level. Even like that first summer league game, if he can play in the summer league, is gonna be ridiculous. You saw the hype that Chet Holmgren got last year. Like that's gonna be times 10. So
it is.
I really before I even get into what his ceiling could be, I really think he's going to take the league by storm. I really believe that fans and the media specifically are going to push him to the moon as far as the hype goes. Like I think immediately, and it's just because he's kind of warranted some of that, but I think the majority of basketball fans know of him now, but the minute he's drafted and he's in the NBA and he's got that jersey on, he's going to become one of the most popular players in the game pretty quickly. I can strongly believe that.
Yeah. I mean, you think about just like what a random exhibition game against the G League Ignite did in terms of just attention and buzz afterward and even buzz going in. Like You're right. I hadn't even thought about like what his first summer league game is going to be like. People are going to be packed in there like sardines. Like it's going to be out of control.
It's
going to
be a media storm for sure.
Yeah, and I think the hype for that will far exceed what that Ignite Metropolitans game did, just because now like they're even more known commodities than they are. And you're going to have a team's fan base that has a very specific reason to tune in, where this was like, oh man, like, let's just check these guys out. They have a ton of buzz, where this is going to be like, we know what team he's on. We're excited. Yeah. We want to see what he has to offer.
Yeah. And that's exactly. And so, you know, to answer the rest of your question, as far as his ceiling goes, I really believe that he has the potential to be one of the best players that we've seen. I really, it's, and you know, I've heard many people say it, many people that I trust in their opinion as well. Like if all it always has the asterisks of health is obviously, and you know, a good long, healthy career, but if he's able to maintain said healthy career, I just can't see where, if his trajectory continues the way it is and he keeps developing these aspects of his game, what does he lack? I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't know. So I think that over the course of his career, if he keeps developing, obviously if he's in the right situation, that plays a lot into it. If he goes to the right team, I am a firm believer that he's kind of on that level of like, say a LeBron, where it's kind of like, it doesn't really matter. I think he elevates whatever team drafts him. I think he rises above the situation he's in, regardless of how good the coaching staff is at developing young players, whatever. I think he rises above that just because of the pure talent. So I would say ceiling, one of the best players ever. Like it's funny to say that, but like I can't see a more realistic like highest point. Like it.
No. So few guys come in with that kind of potential. And I think what's interesting with Victor too is like, obviously he's very big and obviously he can't shoot. And like, those have been the selling points for him for a long time. But as far as just like the actual jump in production from last year to this year is staggering. Like, this is a guy who, like, this was all like still kind of theoretical a year ago, like playing in this same league last year, you know, he was scoring, 8 points per game. And, you know, like it was not anything close to what it is now. Like, he's literally, you know, now at 22 points per game, his field goal percentage is higher. His 3-point percentage is 3% higher, even though he's taking twice as many threes. His free throw percentage jumped like 15%, rebounding better, blocking more shots, passing way better, like seeing the floor, which he wasn't doing at all a year ago. Like the fact that it was already on paper, just like, oh wow, these tools are fascinating and he has a chance to be special, to then taking that sort of skill leap in 1 year, it's like, oh man, like there's a real good possibility this is going to actualize itself.
Right, for sure. And like I said, he's been a fascinating player to look at. I've always kind of been a sucker for like the players like Bobo, like guys like Chet Holmgren. Like I was a big fan of him coming in. There's guys who don't make sense, guys who are just it shouldn't be able to move and play with the fluidity, play with the skill at that size, like that it shouldn't be possible. It doesn't make sense. I love players like that. So I'm a big fan of Victor. Got some stuff in the works of hopefully a project coming out on him this summer, closer to the draft. Obviously, got some familiar faces that are going to be involved with that from those ceilings. So excited about that.
For sure, man. Well, I really appreciate you coming on here, taking the time and get to talk about your work. And if you haven't checked out Trice's work, like, go do it. It's like my favorite way to just like, oh, I've got like 20 minutes to kill, like Trice video, like let's go throw one on and awesome. Learn something about basketball, reminisce about guys from the past, learn a little bit more about guys that are still doing it. It's a phenomenal basketball YouTube channel, and there's a lot of them out there. Not all of them are good. Trice's is good, so make sure you give him a look. There's plenty of good ones out there, and his is one of them. So Trice, just want to once again have you just kind of plug your stuff and let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. And like I said, I take a lot of pride in the people I work with. We take a lot of pride in, you know, putting out some of the best quality basketball content we can. We take a lot of pride in that. You know, it's something that I like to be able to sit back and watch some of my own stuff and say, hey, you know, this is exactly what I set out to create. So I appreciate you saying that. It means a lot. Like I said, you can find me at Trice on YouTube. That's T-R-I-C-E. All kinds of basketball content from past players, Michael Jordan, AI, Vince Carter, guys from the 90s, all the way to current players like Jordan Poole, Bobo, Kevin Porter Jr. We've covered all that. We got all the bases covered, man. And we got a lot of stuff coming. 2023 is going to be a big year. And I can't wait to share it with you guys.
We're so glad to have you on the show, Trice. Make sure you give him a follow. Make sure you're subscribed here on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed, wherever you are listening. Don't forget to check out NoCeilingsNBA.com every single day of the week for written content, including Sundays with our guy Steven in the mix there. So thank you all for tuning in. Trice, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you guys next time. Take care.
Sure. Catch y'all later.